The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Football Acca.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So I thought last Monday was the last show, lads, but there's a bit of happening during the week here. So Cathal Barrett came up for interview and Conor O'Donoghue from the Fixtures Task Force Committee is coming in as well. So there's enough here to do a show. So we give the people what they want, basically, Conan and Conor. We're going to start off with the news. This is last night's news. Yeah, last night or the night before, Michael Deignan was elected as chairman of the Offaly County Board. Great news for me. Like, I mean, you want somebody who's a player's man. You want someone who's not in that administration role where, you know, you have to wonder where their priorities kind of lie sometimes, in my experience. So it's good to have someone like Michael Deignan in here, and it'll see how things potentially change under a complete change of direction, change of leadership. So he won by 76-62. His running mates, Dervil Dolan, was elected to treasurer, and Brian Gavin, who was also up, he was voted as the Leinster Council delegate. And you can be sure when Brian Gavin goes to those Leinster Council meetings and the motion is to take Dublin out of Croke Park, that Brian Gavin will not vote to leave them in there for money. That's the great thing about this, lads. You know what I mean? Do you get my point? The more people you get into these positions as delegates that are players' men, the better. Because you think about what are those lads who've given up their lives best chances, not what is going to make my life a little bit easier. So that's the way that's going to work. There's another supporter of Deignan, it was Colm Cummins. He didn't make it. He lost out marginally to James Murphy on 70-68 for vice chairman. Interestingly enough, when Deignan was elected, some of the people who had been in the Offaly County Board already all pulled out. It's like they didn't want to be part of this new regime. And I think that's very disappointing. So the position assistant secretary, PRO and cultural officer all withdrew their names from the race. And vice chairman Niall Gannon also pulled out the election for his role. The only remaining nomination for assistant treasurer, Brian Flynn, also withdrew from the race following Dolan's victory as treasurer. All that kind of thing, you know, like, I mean, it's like, that's the regime I'm used to. I don't want these people coming in and rocking the boat. That's disappointing that they would stand down like that.
Yeah, like, are you there for Offaly or not?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing there? Like, I get that you might have a bit of loyalty to the last chairman. Maybe you liked him, but there's a new chairman coming in who is there to try and do his best for Offaly, you know, and you can help that by doing your role as best possible.
Yeah, so I think they're showing themselves up here, lads, big time by pulling out like that. And Tommy Byrne, in fairness to him, was magnanimous when he finished up and wished Michael all the best of luck and said he was fairly elected and things like that. So he came across pretty well, and change probably was needed. Michael Deignan says, I'm looking forward to working with the incoming management committee, the county board, the clubs of Offaly and our schools, everybody else, all our stakeholders. I just want to unite Offaly GAA after this challenging campaign. So, like, I mean, best of luck to Michael, and it'd be very interesting, you know, just to see how that works out. And is there a rapid improvement in Offaly's fortunes? Because if there is, there'd be a lot of these lifer administrators looking
in
over their
counties.
Shoulders. Well, there should be, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's true, it's true.
I'm going to look at this very, very closely, very, very closely. He's going to keep up his co-commentaries in RT, and I see some people criticising that, and they're like, oh, well, because now he's the chairman, if when he's on the co-com, he won't be fair because he'll have the... Sure, he's an Offaly man anyways. Sure, that criticism will come to anybody. Like, keep doing the co-coms. He's granted them. They don't cross over. Like, unless, obviously, Offaly are playing at the same time and he needs to be at a certain game as in his role as chairman.
Co-coms wouldn't necessarily bother me, but let's say Michael Deignan as a columnist that's speaking on affairs in other counties in his position as a chairperson of Offaly GAA. Some people might be like, who are you to be criticising me? Get your own house in order first.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
He'll have to keep it to playing stuff rather than structural stuff.
Co-commentary wouldn't bother me at all. But you said, just from, like, I don't know enough about the inner workings of AFL-IGA, but from the outside perspective, given what's gone on in recent years, it seems to be that, like, change is no harm. Do you know what I mean? And, like, Michael Dignan, and again, my exposure to him is limited to what I've seen of him on TV, but he just strikes me as a really straight shooter, like Brian Gavin, and it seems like AFL-IGA need a lot of straight shooters, you know? So, like yourself, I'm kind of going to... Gonna maintain a lot of interest in it. The footballers seem to be kind of on the up at the moment. The hurlers, like, as I think as Michael Dignan said, like, it was the relegation to the Christie Ring that really kind of spurred him into action. And of course, he'd be a hurling man over a football man. So, yeah. For me, the positives really outweigh any negatives to come out of this. So, definitely worth keeping an eye on Offaly in the next few years.
It definitely is. And in fair, Michael's better known as his hurling, but he played senior for Offaly football as well. So, he won't be pushing all his resources into the hurlers and say, ah, forget that big ball nonsense. So more news there is there's going to be smart yellow slitters. So smart like your smartphone. So there's going to be technology inside these slitters. And it looks like they're going to try and use them in next year's hurling championship. So these smart yellow slitters have the capacity to prevent goal line controversies and could pave the way for score detection technology in all major GA grounds. So we have Hawkeye, but we only have it in Croke Park and we have it in Turles, right? Now, for football, there'd never be games in Turles anyway, so we only have it in Croke Park. This won't affect football, but in the future, you'd never know. It could be a smart ball. We had the ball here we used to do on Sports Joe Live. Do you remember
how hard you could kick it? Yeah.
And it could measure the speed of it and all sorts of kind of stuff. I think that's all in the future. But anyways, in the slitter, there's going to be this technology. The problem with it, the problem with Hawkeye is it's very expensive, and that's the reason it's not rolled out across the whole country. It's 8,000 to operate Hawkeye for a match. Gone. Too dear. It's not operational. So I think these games in hurling, these yellow smart slitters could overtake Hawkeye because they can detect scores, they can detect goal line, they can detect deflections. Like, you know, the big controversy with Limerick and Kilkenny this year where it was a 65 and it wasn't given. So all these kind of things. So the new slitter can generate data showing whether it broke invisible magnetic fields projected on goal lines and above uprights, making a quick and accurate reading as to whether a goal or a point has been scored. Here's the one. The expected cost of erecting these boundaries is understood to be affordable enough that it could conceivably be installed in every inter-county ground in the country. So I think this is fantastic. You know, some people are saying, why are they yellow? Right? And Shane McGrath was given out last night saying, maybe I'm just a traditionalist. If it's not broken, why do we have to fix it? Leave the white slitter. They're doing fine. Now, I'm a traditionalist. I don't know what I am. If that's tradition, I say, well, go on. I call myself a traditionalist. I don't like, I like the traditions of Gaelic games not to change massively, but I think things can be improved on. Brian Gavin is in the Examiner. He is on, Shane McGrath was on Game On. Brian Gavin was saying, some league games under lights, it's a little bit of an issue, especially on a cold night if there's a little bit of frost and frog around. The yellow slitter would be useful. And of course it would be useful. Why is everybody so, you know, determined not to change things? Here's a good example. In tennis, imagine if they changed to a white ball. How outlandish would that be? A white ball on the white lines, you wouldn't see a thing. So wouldn't it be outlandish for tennis to change to white? You would say, why? It's so easy to see the yellow ball. The lines are white. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And they're going to change to a white ball. That's outrageous. But for hurling to go to the yellow is seen as outrageous as well. It's bizarre, isn't it?
When I saw, like, the words, leave the white slitter alone, I thought, Jesus, like, GA people don't help themselves. No. Like, you know, like, there's a lot to be complaining about and a lot to preserve, but for God's sake, the colour of the ball, like...
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind a yellow Gaelic football. I have no problem with it, because, we saw in the... Was it the...
There was one, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
There was one.
Yeah, I was trying to think that this morning. I think there was.
Oh, there was one going around for ages, when all the snow hit. 2010,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, definitely.
But the Glenties point, you know these ones that fade past the crossbar? It was a point.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But like, the yellow ball is showing that up immediately. Yeah, yeah. The white ball won't show that. Yeah. Like, I mean, it should be yellow in both codes. Yeah. End of story.
And football should have more of an objection because it's way bigger than a slitter. Yeah. Like, you know, if it's an aesthetic.
And I don't know what it is, but whenever I play golf, I'm pulling out a yellow ball. Yeah.
I know what it is. Really. Like you're pulling all your shots.
There's a novelty to using this cool little yellow ball. I don't know, or you could get a pink ball or anything. Anyways, that's it. I don't see the objection to that. But look, GAA people don't like change, and hurling people within the GAA people are even more especially don't like change because their game's perfect.
Yeah.
Why change perfection?
The gods didn't give us a yellow ball. They gave us a white one.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the founding fathers. So, the big news coming out this week from a Laois point of view and Loud is, from a Laois point of view, unfortunately, the two Kingstons have not, Donal and Paul, have not committed to next year, which is a disaster for Laois. A complete disaster. Now, Donny has threatened it the last few years and he's come back in, so wouldn't rule him out completely. It's a huge kick in the arse to Mike Quirk, who would have been taken over this job thinking that the two Kingstons are probably two guaranteed starters on my forward line. Donny Kingston with an advanced mark. I'm just so disappointed, but I can't blame Donny. I've done it myself. It's just very frustrating for supporters to go, Jesus, Donny, the advanced mark. We could really make something. We have a new manager. Please. You like to go to his house and beg him. And added to that then, Stephen Attroyd, who's been the captain the last few years, is going travelling. Again, you can't blame any fella. I've done it. And it seems to be more and more people not committing. Andy MacDonald is the latest one from Loud, who's not committing next year. You know, you add that to Ben McCormack. You add that to Ben McCormack from Kildare. Cavan have been absolutely decimated. Killian Clark, Darren McVitie, and the talk is Darren Moynihan isn't going as well. They're in Division 2. They're gone. Cavan are gone. Again, supporters going, lads. And then you think of the lads themselves and you're like, geez, they can do what they want. Like, they're not contracted. Michael Quinlivan is going. And like I mentioned, Stephen Attroyd. I don't know, lads. Is this more of a problem than it ever has been before?
I don't think so. Just I think it seems to be a little bit like a few more names, but there's always a few.
Happened.
You're on about Donny Kingston. I'm saying, like, I'm sure people have been begging him for the last few years, and he says, well, something has to give sometime. Do you know what I mean? It just speaks to something that we've spoken about constantly in this show. It's just the pressure of having to do it all year round. I mean, you just, like, the more demands they place on lads, something's going to give. And like, as you said, I can't. Are the Kingstons going traveling? Did they say, or did they say it was?
They haven't said. I don't think they're going traveling. I think they just need a year out.
Yeah, but as you said, like,
they're not committing, or maybe they want to play with the club and they want to just have a relaxed life, because, like, we know it is intense.
It's disappointing, but I wouldn't have an issue with any single one of them. And just, like, I don't know, the demands seem, well, we probably say this every year, but the demands seem greater than ever. So, like, this time next year, we could be saying, you know, there could be double the amount of names that we have this year. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know, is it something that needs to be addressed in terms of the fixtures task force and stuff like that? But it's a trend that doesn't seem to be dying down anytime soon.
I think that, yeah, it's difficult. Daniel Flynn was doing media yesterday. I interviewed Cottle Barrett. I wasn't able to do both of them, but that, I'll hopefully get that. Daniel Flynn during the league, because he's a great interviewee. He was talking about leaving last year. We know he left last year. Niall Kelly left just last year. He said the graw had kind of gone. I sat down with Johnny Doyle as he was managing the college team, and he said, you look like a fella that's fallen out of love with the game. It was a build up of different things. I can imagine that conversation. Imagine Daniel Flynn maybe just walking around in a college game, and the body language is all arseways, and Johnny Doyle's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Are you all right, Daniel? Like, you don't look like yourself. And he's like, I'm sick of it, Johnny. Like, I mean, I've had those conversations that has been identified. I remember Alan Brogan's father, Bernard Brogan, pulled me aside and said, you're all right. He was involved with the college team. I was just being overly petulant in a game, and I remember, I think I got involved in a bit of a row with a lad, which was be unlike me, and he's like, what's wrong? He says, I'm sick of it. But that was it. Like, that was the kind of, I know exactly how Daniel felt.
Yeah, and very recognisable for somebody like Daniel Flynn, because when he's at his best, it looks like the most enjoyable thing in the world. You know, he plays with such freedom, and yeah, like, he should be playing with all that zest that he has. Like, you know, when I say, when he is not at that level, it's just very noticeable. Like, you know?
Yeah, that's it. So, like, I mean, he gave some reasons of why he dropped out last year, which maybe give a little bit of an insight. He says, the last number of years, training was stepping up the whole time. Everyone is trying to bridge that gap. That's obviously to Dublin. And I had a lot of stuff going on myself with college. I was trying to work. I was trying to spend time with my friends and family. I was just trying to keep all the balls in the air, and something had to give. I started to resent it a small bit. I didn't want to go training, or it was becoming a bit of a chore. Instead, it started to get to me. And that's why taking a step back was probably the right thing to do. Exactly. Why keep going on through it? And I do think the commitment can be difficult. We know, all know weddings. We know festivals during the summer. We know your friends, especially young fellas, friends after a year of college go away and feckin' wherever to go. Aya Napa, is that where they still go, or where do the young do?
Santa Pons in my day, I think.
Well, it was in my day too, Santa Pons. Then it moved on to Aya Napa. I was too old to ever go there. But you know, you miss out on all that stuff, and that's fine a year or two, because to be honest, your love of Gaelic football and your your desire to reach the top of that is like, I don't want to go on that holiday anyway. But then 3 or 4 years when that dies down, you're like, geez, I've missed out on all that. And now there's loads of... It depends on the personality, but it can go, it can fester with you and you can start resenting football that you miss out on too much stuff. And when that happens, take the year out, do it, come back the following year. Yeah. That was always my attitude.
And you're mad hungry then when you come back the following year. Like, you know, you're enjoying it. You've got to do what you want to do. And then it's like you're playing football again on your terms. Mm. It's not like 15 years or somebody telling you what to do.
Yeah. Where 1 year rolls into the other and you never feel in control because you're following orders.
Exactly.
Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. You're following a lot of orders and how to live your life orders. Like, imagine someone telling an adult how to live your life.
Yeah. And this time of year, especially I was thinking about the Leash Boys, you know, when you get a new manager in as well, and then they're coming in with all this enthusiasm and new plans, and you're just like, piss off. Like, you know, when, especially when it's starting in November, but when you take a year out, then you are deciding when you want to go back.
Yeah.
And it's on your terms.
And then you might even start thinking, geez, I don't know why I was so against that.
Yeah.
Like,
I really miss it.
But they all need, so again, I'm not annoyed with the Kingstons, but I'm annoyed.
As a fan, of course.
Yeah, 100%. Because it is hard. It's definitely hard. So David Reedy is another one, lads, who stepped away from Clare last year. He needed a break. He's back in this year now under Brian Lohan. So Brian Lohan is the new Clare manager, and he told a great little story of he had a run-in with Brian Lohan. So we know that Brian Lohan was manager of UL, and there's fairly big rivalry with UL and Limerick IT. And Reedy was playing with Limerick IT, and he was telling a story of a bit of a row that happened. So he said there was a shoulder or two. This was before one of the UL LIT games. He said there was a shoulder or two to the UL lads in the huddle. I was turning around, and all of a sudden, I just got a hand onto my neck. I looked up, and it was Lohan himself. But once he put his hand on me, your natural reaction is to throw your hand back up into his. Holy war broke out. It was basically a 30-man on 30-man brawl. So that was my first introduction to Brian Lohan. He says, really, he says, it was kind of a natural reaction. If someone puts their hand to you, what do? You're either going to crawl away or you're going to fight. So that was an interesting first meeting. Yeah. He says Lohan joked with him about it or whatever. I'd say, in a way, Brian Lohan would be very impressed with that kind of reaction with David Reedy.
Did he know he was taking on?
His future manager,
Well, this fella from a team of a Clare team that weren't exactly shrinking violets with himself and Shawnee McMahon, and I can't think of the midfielder's name.
Colin Lynch, Ollie Baker.
But Davy Fitz would have been over LIT, right?
Yeah.
At the time, so no surprise that David Reedy would have been wound up before the game.
Yeah, well, we don't know. He didn't give the year, so we don't know definitely. Okay. Yeah, well, there's a good chance it was. Sure, David was with him for so long. Yeah, so that's it. So a big hand came on the back of his neck. Thought that was a good one. Liam Cahill, the new Waterford manager, has been speaking, lads, and I think this is a nice, refreshing quote. So I'm going to read it out to you. He says, I'm a fierce believer that hurling, this isn't just hurling, this can go for any code. I'm a fierce believer that hurling is played going forward. I'm not a believer in going back to field to ask questions about the opposition. Now the fear is probably there that you could get opened up. And when you go in, you go up against top quality opposition, that may happen. But I just can't get my head around any team going out and not being able to ask questions to the opposition. I said earlier that hurling is a game of instinct and being able to make a decision in a split second. I thought that was a great line. But I just can't get my head around any team coming out and not being able to ask questions to the opposition. Just got me thinking about, Gaelic football and the counter-attack game. And I was at the Leinster final, obviously, and Aer Óg, who are a good team and no problem. They do the counter-attack game really well. They break in numbers and it's great to watch when that works, and they destroyed Portlaoise with it. I think every team should have some element of a counter-attack game. Depending on the time in the game, if you're defending a lead, 10 minutes to go, it's perfect to maybe invite them on with you, to you, and hit them on the break when they're getting desperate and they won't have, you know, maybe force a pass that they wouldn't have done. Perfect. But Aer Óg had a gale force wind, lads, that they were leaving two forwards down there and a huge disconnect then to the rest of them. They only had a running game. And I'm like, that's so silly. You know, you only have one weapon. You have a strong wind. I would be like, Ballyboden scored 3 points. I would be like, let's leave our defence wide open man on man. Let Ballyboden score 5 or 6 instead of 3, and we'll try and hit them for 2-8 with the wind. We'll bombard these lads now with this gale. You know what I mean? Mm. That attitude, and this isn't a criticism of Aer Óg. This is a general criticism of the game. Why cannot there be a couple of game plans? And one being leave four or five forwards up as much as possible if we have an advantage of a wind. I see it loads of times. But he's like, I just can't get my head around any team coming out and not being able to ask questions of the opposition. Why would they not?
Yeah.
Why would you not just go? And you can still be a defensive team, but when it's required, don't start the game like that when you have the advantage of a wind. It just looks silly.
Yeah. Like, you think of Dublin, right? Daniel Flynn's talking about trying to bridge the gap to them. Dublin, like, look indestructible all the time. And then Tyrone played him in the league and just pumped ball into Cathal McShane and Matty Donnelly. Made him look human. Like, had them shaking, had them making mistakes.
Yeah.
And then Kerry played him in the final again. Like, Johnny Cooper looked like a mess. Yeah. Johnny Cooper. Like, yeah. And, you know, all these boys, and suddenly, like, they're sweating and again, they're panicking. Like, Killian Spillane comes on, just roasts boys, puts it in the net because you're asking questions, but you can't do that without having four forwards.
You can't do it without leaving enough forwards up. And you have to potentially lose out on one side to gain on the other side. And we've analysed this to death, lads. Yeah. But it just seems very slow kind of turnaround, because you're watching the club championships now and a lot of them are playing one or two forwards and that big disconnect. And the teams that are able to get support up there, like Kilcoo in the Ulster final, look good. But against Derry Gonnelly, they didn't get that support up and they look terrible. And you're kind of leaving it to chance. Like, is this move going to allow our two wing forwards to get up? And then they have a grueling feckin' game. Right, you have to be back here working and you have to get back up there. And these lads must be running marathons to try and, you know, just leave forwards up there. Lose out one end to gain the other end. And hopefully in the championship next year, we'll see a lot more than that. Like, I remember, like, it's even highlighted when you see team, remember Carlo against Laois, or any team that's down, and they're still depending on a counter-attack game when they're down.
It
just looks so silly. It's not that hard to have a counter-attack game within your, like, a shout from the sideline, lads, we're three up, 10 minutes to go.
A trigger,
drop.
Yeah.
Drop. Yeah. Let's work it now and surprise them. Anyways, I don't want to get too much in it, but it got me thinking, because I was reading the Irish News, it was Cathal O'Kane talking about Ulster's performance in the last decade. And like, I kind of laughed at it. Like, Ulster is the only province that talk about the province rather than each. In Leinster, Munster, Connacht, we're worried about ourselves. In Ulster, it's a problem with Ulster. And it's just a history kind of where you had this kind of, you know, I don't know, underachieving province, and you know, you're probably getting hammered by the big boys going up to Croke Park until it all changed in the 90s. And it's like, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
But like, I thought that would change when you all start winning All Irelands, but it hasn't. It maybe a little bit, but not that much. Anyways, he talked a little bit about the record, and it doesn't make for good reading for Ulster football, if we're being honest. They've won All Ireland. That's Donegal.
They've been more than Connacht.
More than Connacht, yeah. Connacht don't have an inquest into Connacht. Yeah, yeah. They're just worried about Mayo, Galway, Roscommon, whoever it is. They've no national league. Right, so Dublin have 5, Cork 3, Kerry Mayo 1 each, Tyrone and Derry got the finals. The All-Ireland club title, they haven't won that since 2012. They won the first three of the decade, Galls, Crossmaglen 1-2. They've only won one under 21, that was Tyrone in 15. And they've been to two other finals in 10 and 11. And they've only won minor, and that was 2010. It's been a very underperforming decade, and I'm going back to the reason for that, and which I don't think Carr touched on this, like, it's the tactics. Telling you, lads, since 2011, more than any other province, Ulster has been in a defensive football, state where they're not coming out of it because they're worried that the other team won't come out of it and they'll get hit on the counter. I don't know, for whatever reason, all the defensive coaches and the gurus of defensive football are from Ulster. If we're being honest, let's call a spade a spade. They haven't come out of it. They haven't won All-Irelands at any grade, really. And I think it's because of the football that they're playing up there. They're not, like Liam Cahill says, I just can't get my head around any team coming out and not being able to ask questions of the opposition. They're not doing that. They're not doing that enough. And you made the good point of Tyrone doing it to Dublin and beat Dublin in the league. We didn't see Tyrone doing that for 10 years. Haven't won an All-Ireland doing that for 10 years. Nobody has other than Donegal, and they surprised everyone that year. You know, I don't know, Conan, I don't know what you think of it. I know, I'm glad Stephen McDonald's not here because I'd be getting around.
Just looking at Conan's stony face here. I don't agree.
There's the footballers in Ulster to challenge for All-Irelands, but go and challenge for them. Don't wait for another team to make a mistake and then maybe hit them on the break. That's all gone. Those tactics are gone. Find something new for the next decade and try and win an All-Ireland. Go for it. Donegal can do it. have the potential to do it. They drew with Kerry in a shootout this year, yeah. like, and that was blatantly leaving four forwards up. You just want the others to follow suit.
Yeah, I think I asked you the other day, like, you know, Donegal personnel wise, like, they probably have as good a team as Kerry or Mayo. Like, you know, if you were going down through the last few years, you would say Donegal are right up there with them, and they haven't pushed on to a semi final yet, you know, which is a big disappointment for them. Like, I actually, sometimes I'm from Ulster, so I get naturally defensive outside of GAA as well. Like, Ulster people are just like defensive, like, in a long history of Ireland trying to sell us off to Britain and stuff like that, you know, but and trying to feel included. But yeah, like, I think, like, I don't know if it started in Ulster, but I think this has spread all over. Like, you know, I play football in Dublin now as well. Like, and, you know, I see, like, you know, teams just playing counter-attacking games, and, like, the idea is getting fit and being strong. And, yeah, it's always about, like, not conceding at the other end because you think you can do it at the other side. Probably with Ulster, maybe it started there earlier, and I think it's seeped right down to underage levels and stuff. And you can see these big teams coming through, and they're all playing that same, same sort of level. But they're, like...
All the big winning teams, though, have not played that system. Isn't that outside of Donegal in 13 and 12? And they surprised everybody. They haven't won one since using those.
That yeah, and 12, they devolved a little bit from 2011 evolved. As well. They weren't as ultra-defensive as they were in 2011
too. Their counter-attack was much better. Yeah, and McGuinness got down on the field, more refined, and they broke brilliantly. But I remember teams that year, lads, just pushing up, attacking them, not holding on to possession, giving them those turnovers, gone. And then didn't have the work rate to follow them back. Look, it was the perfect kind of ambush on Gaelic games, that was. But now my point is it doesn't work. All the good club teams that win All-Irelands, Dr. Crokes, Cara Finn, don't play like that. Dublin, Kerry, Mayo don't play like that. The teams winning All-Irelands are contesting them regularly. They don't play like that. Cork this year went away from that and, look, made vast improvements trying to attack teams. I just think just start asking questions of the opposition. Mm. Like you said, look how human Dublin looked when you actually start asking them questions. Yeah.
The problem of Ulster is that it's always been a competitive enough province on its own. So when the games are that tight as well, there's less chance of people taking risks. Do you know, if you know that the game's going to be decided by 2 or 3 points, then you're not going to open up as much. So teams go in as a stalemate, and the other team are playing that way, so then you play that way, and you're just seeing how things go. And like Armagh are probably the only ones to really open up in the last few years, but hasn't gone that well for them, especially in Ulster.
Yeah, so maybe they've made improvements this year and now. I don't think Armagh had the personnel, but I think that Armagh were a lot better this year, you know, playing like that. Did better than they had the other years, you know, like they've been gradually trying to come out of that. I don't know. It's just, I just know if I was managing a team, I'd be like, why would I leave two forwards up there with a huge gap? That is not going to benefit me attacking. So why am I doing it?
Yeah.
Why would I do it?
Yeah. And I think like a lot of Ulster teams now are trying to, they are opening up and they're trying to have an attack game plan, but they haven't been willing to lose something. So they're trying to do both. So in their case, it seems like let's just get fitter and we'll do all this defensive work and then we'll get into an attacking position then as well. And that's hard to do for 70 minutes.
Sometimes I wonder with Donegal as well, and we know traditionally they've always been a hand passing team and there's been different theories of why that has been. So that game plan suited them down to the ground. You know, the running game, the breaking game, through the hands, intricate hand passing. They did that anyways, even when they won in 92, they were known as a hand passing team. But for kick passing counties to resort to leaving two men up there with no option to get it down to them, it's bizarre. It's dumb. It's just dumb. Stop copying it. It's old news.
Galway being one of the prime examples. Yeah.
I think it always does Jim McGuinness a disservice as well. Like, they hand pass for most of it, but then they use the Colin McFadden
the
and Michael
time,
Murphy.
With a good booming diagonal ball.
Two goals against Mayo in five minutes, 2012.
Exactly. And it's funny because these defensive tactics are very risk adverse, so nobody wants to make a mistake or kick the ball away. But McGuinness was happy enough to lose the ball in the other side of the pitch because he was trying something attacking wise. Yeah. Then he focused on defence.
Yeah. But the other teams weren't in 2012, they weren't really protecting those 2-1-2s.
No,
you know, there was a naivety to it. McGuinness tactically was well ahead of his time.
Yeah.
But now it's caught up on that. And now what's going to be the new thing? It has to go back some way towards the traditional leaving forward. How can you score without scoring forwards and get it up to them? And hopefully that will be the case.
And it has, like, everyone's looked at Mayo and saw that they got closest to Dublin, and now Kerry obviously gave them some game. So I think it has gone back to that now.
I think it has. You see, then you have people saying, well, geez, look what the players Kerry have and look what the players Mayo have. And it's like, that's not the point. Leash won't beat Dublin, but Leash should beat Westmead playing like that.
Yeah.
So it's all relative. Like, I mean, the idea that Derry and Down should stink out the place with that kind of, oh, well, that's Kerry. Sure, Derry and Down are on the same level. Go for it, lads.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see who the best forwards are. I just the idea. I think this decade we're going to see a shift back around, and a lot of these defensive gurus will be all out of jobs. They'll be on the sidelines saying, "Tighten up at the back on the bench," while we see goals and points, and everyone else cheers. Right? A Roscommon motion. This is a classic. I'm going to have to speed up here. Has Colin O'Donoghue coming in here shortly? The Roscommon motion. This was at the Roscommon convention last night. So just to get these motions, obviously come in, and then maybe they're put forward to the. These are the Roscommon motions that would be put forward to the National Congress, isn't it? This how it works, anyways. My understanding of these administrative comments.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it works. Well, yeah.
Okay, not an administration sort of fella. So this Roscommon motion, which was put forward by the Western Gaels GA club. That's Carl Craig's club. Carl Craig, what a great brain on the game. What a great player. I'd say he will be reading this. Like, what club member put this forward? Anyways, here, I'm going to read it out to you, lads. This is a classic. Following an aggressive foul, the team awarded the free kick may avail of the following additional option to those already listed in the rule. The player taking the kick may kick for a more attacking position by kicking the ball over the sideline, following which his team will be awarded a free kick from the hands from outside the boundary line from a point the ball across the sideline. Now, are you starting to feel nauseous here? A decision to avail of this is supposed to be communicated to referee, and if the ball doesn't cross the sideline, play continues as normal. He wants a rugby penalty introduced into Gaelic games. It's outrageous. Whoever it is, this fella needs, I said last night on Twitter, he needs a lifetime ban from the association. We don't want anyone like, and he even calls it a boundary line instead of a sideline. Like, I mean, is this for real? I think this could be a wind up. I don't want to get too annoyed about it, but that's it. So he wants a free kick and then you kick for touch.
Right. Good job he said it must be communicated to the referee. You can imagine somebody trying to take a free kick and they put it out over the sideline by accident and then say to the ref, "Oh, I called for that. I wanted the belt."
Went off the outside of the screen. Well, I don't know. Is this creeping in? We saw Tommy Walsh lift David Moran.
Yeah.
That's a line out move.
That was genius.
That was genius. Yeah. This is far from genius.
Okay, right. We're going to finish on this one, lads. Davy Fitz was talking in. I have to say, the Wexford dressing room seems like a very fun kind of place to be. So we know they play music. He was talking about this last year. The music is blaring out before training. They arrive there early. They enjoy each other's company. They go out in the field. And he said before the Tipperary game last year, they were out in the field, the players, without being asked, an hour before training, doing their own thing. Now, it is for an All-Ireland semi-final. So, like, I mean, let's, you know, it's not Stephen Cluxton levels here where he's doing that every game. We don't know. But anyways, he was talking about the music. So they have a music director that dictates what music is on in his restroom. He says they take that very serious, whoever's in charge of the music. We sacked Mark Fanning halfway through the year. He says there was a meeting called and he was got rid of as director of music. They do things like this for the crack and I kind of love it, where they'll make me call a meeting just to sack him. It's a classic. We brought in Shane Reck, the quietest guy in the team, and now he's the music director.
Oh, that's great.
So
that's
I can imagine, Dave, I always remember the Lions video. Do you remember the one where they had the court? That looked like great fun. I remember Justin McNulty did something similar with us where we gave out awards at Christmas time for best trainers, most horrible tattoo, just silly stuff.
Yeah.
You know, at Christmas, and we all enjoyed it, and lads came up, got the reward, Justin shook their hand and went back down. But I can imagine Davy Fitz coming into the dressing room, "Lads, very important here now, it's a meeting now," and your man goes, who is it, Mark Fanning, goes up on the dock to try and explain his director of music, and look, lads, it just looks like good fun, right?
That's brilliant. A lot of pressure there on Shane Reck as well. It is a tough job to keep everybody happy with
the
music.
It is, especially for a quiet man, Shane Reck. You know, listen, we feel your pain here, Shane. Anyways, listen, lads, we have to leave it there because we've got Cathal Barrett up next, and after that we'll talk to Conor O'Donoghue.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens. And it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great. There was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out 30, but unlucky to lose, like.
Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
Cathal Barrett, welcome to the GAR.
Thanks, Colin.
So you are here as an ambassador for On The Ball team building training camps. So you can fill us in on that. You have a lovely new top there from them and everything.
Yeah, lovely new top. It's a company down in Kerry that have set up. They're doing basically team building for sports teams. So what they do is they bring you down to a nice scenic area in Kerry, do a lot of team building exercises and workshops, and they'll also bring in a guest speaker to talk kind of the mental side of preparation, I suppose, for teams. It's like the kind of Kieran Donahue and these lads that have been there and done it all. So it's a really good experience.
All right, sounds good. Maybe you'll have to do some of the talks, considering that you're an ambassador for them. So we'll look forward to that. It's probably geared a bit more towards club teams than county teams, really, because I wouldn't think Liam Sheedy necessarily needs that.
Yeah, so I suppose mainly club teams, I suppose, starting off, but I'm sure to, as it progresses and hopefully builds, I'm sure they'll try bring in county teams. But look at like the area has in Kerry and up mountains and things like that. I think it's ideal, and the more hardship, the better for inter-county teams. I'm sure they'll get wind of pure hardship for players if nobody bring you down.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So how's things down in Tip? Have the celebrations died down? You're back in training. Everything's focused on the new year, I suppose.
Yeah. It's died down a long time ago. Unfortunately, I suppose after the week, then you're kind of lads are gone back into work and gone back to their studies and things like that. And look, the club scene started back straight away. So the celebrations ended, I suppose, after the week. But everyone kept celebrating for us, no doubt.
Is that the thing? The main thing after an All Ireland? I've never done it, but Limerick celebrated last week, but then there was no extended celebrations. Is that kind of intense week of celebrations, and then everybody kind of maybe bringing the cup to your club a couple of weeks later, yeah, or whatever, is that how it works?
Yeah, I suppose kind of is. Like you have your couple of days, maybe to the Wednesday or even to Thursdays if some lads can manage it. But I suppose look, you have to go back to reality as well. Like at the end of the day, it is an amateur sport, and lads are working and they're in college and things like that. So you have to kind of go back to reality. But then, like you said, you have your club things, like bring the cup to the clubs, your schools, stuff like that. You'd have little events here and there. Which are always lovely to get to go to. So just plenty more times to kind of meet up and chill again, sit down and have the crack and a bit of a chat.
Yeah, I saw you in the hotel the morning after the All Ireland, and you were surrounded because the big talking point from the All Ireland was you getting the elbow into the face, and I suppose the Kilkenny pundits had a different opinion on that than most of other neutral pundits, however. Did that whole circus, I don't know, was it a bit of a distraction from those two or three days where you'd want to be celebrating, or did you just kind of brush it off?
To be honest, I kind of just brushed it off, really. Like I didn't really care about what was kind of being said about it. Like it was like I don't make the decisions. Like I'm not the referee. I don't make the calls or anything like that. So look, like I just wanted to enjoy the moment to win the All Ireland, really, and enjoy it with the team and with her family and friends. That was kind of the main priority to me. What's done and said after that is out of my control, and it doesn't really concern me, really.
Yeah, some of the criticism, again, only from Kilkenny lads, is that you made a meal of it.
Yeah,
you know, like it was, from my opinion, we said this on the show, it was an elbow flush to the jaw, and you don't know what a reaction can come from that. I've seen heavyweight boxers fall from kind of glancing blows like that. I don't maybe describe what it was like.
I just kind of stepped inside, and Richie just kind of caught me with the shoulder, or the elbow, or whatever it was. But like it was just, I couldn't really make a meal of it. Like to be honest, I suppose it did. People probably thought I made a meal of it, but like it was, the doctor had to assess me and things like that. So like I can't exactly just say to the doctor, "Yeah, I'm grand, let's drive on." Like he has to ask me all the questions.
Not that. It was the initial impact. Like your hands kind of went up, right? But you did fall down in a position where it wasn't really natural. It looked like you were a little bit out.
Yeah. Well, like I suppose maybe it was a kind of shock of getting the hit. Like I wasn't really expecting to get hit at all. To be honest, I thought I'd completely sidestepped him, so maybe it was a bit of shock, but I don't think I was thinking in my head in the middle of an All-Ireland final, right, I need to jump here now, I'm after getting tipped.
You were probably expecting a shoulder. I don't think Richie intended that. He intended to meet you kind of shoulder he missed you.
That was it. Like he intended to shoulder me into the stand as every normal person would do. Like I would do the same, but I just stepped at, I mean, it on the right time at the wrong time, and it just clipped me as well.
Right, okay. And then you ended up as a sweeper for the second half. That came as a big surprise to me. I was like, how will they rejig this now and everything? Like, did that come as a surprise to you?
it didn't really come as hitting. Like, it wasn't something that was prefabricated or sat down and discussed or anything like that, to be honest. It was just my man was gone, so I was just, I was in that role. Obviously they probably could have easily switched if they want and put me on someone, but like, lads had their jobs to do, and
he didn't want to mess up the other kind
maybe,
of.
Maybe so, yeah. But like, I played that role plenty of times before. Like, so it's not
for
a role.
Tip.
Yeah, I played a sweeping role once or twice when teams have played a sweeper against us. So like, it's not something I haven't done before. Like, and look, all I wanted to do was go out and hurl the ball anyway. Like, the boys know that. So I was always going to be in my element.
It was a lovely little role for a second half of an All Ireland, right?
It was a fair treat.
Especially your starting mark and Richie Hogan, and now you have a free role for the second half. Like,
yeah.
Unbelievable. So, but I wanted to talk to you a bit about man marking cornerbacks, because you were one of the man markers in hurling, where you do like to, you know, have a reputation for being a sticky, tight defender. And I don't know, in Gaelic football, they're everywhere on every team, and you don't see as many of them in hurling. It's almost like cornerbacks want to hurl their own area, and, you know, I'll beat you rather than I'll block you out of the game. Is that the kind of attitude in hurling?
Yeah, maybe a small bit. Like, my attitude that I take towards it is, I kind of almost like hurl like a corner forward. Like, I try to get out in front rather than letting him get the ball and then stop him.
Right.
I've no interest in that, really. Like, at the end of the day, like, I just want to hurl and get my hands on the ball, because, like, sure, there's only so much pulling and dragging you can do. Like, you get kind of sick of that. Like,
yeah.
I used to leave that to James Barry. Like,
but it's not easy when the forward gets the ball in his hurl to stop him. Your only option is a block, right?
Oh, and that's it. Yeah. Like, and I suppose, like, you're taking a fair risk going out in front, because if you do miss the ball or anything, like, it's probably going to end up in the back of the net, because they're so close to goal. There's no, you're the last line defence, really, besides the goalie.
Yeah. So does James Barry like this tactics? Because you're meant to be sweeping behind him who does that, right? Isn't that how the whole structure of the fullback lies?
Of course he does. James loves when I'm around there. I'll pick up the ball from, he'll wrestle away and I'll pick up the ball.
And do you enjoy the corner? Because you played wing back at underage, and you played midfield for Michael Ryan in his last year. I think you play midfield for your club as well. So, like, being stuck in the corner, is it like, all right, look, I'll do whatever job you want?
Well, I suppose, like, I started off with Tip and with seniors in the corner. I wasn't going to argue where I played. I was only delighted just to get to play. Like, and sure, then look, I just grew into the position. And no, I genuinely do love it. Like, I love the physical battle. Like, I love going one on one with a fella, and like, I'd go on toe to toe, and like, it's just between the two of you. Like, there's no advantage either fella. It's just whoever wins. Like, so, like, you get a great kick out of that. And I'll take any position on a team. I'll go and stand in 14 instead of Shamey if he wants. I don't mind.
You scored your only ever point for Tip seniors in that game against Clare when you were midfield.
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, I scored. Was it against Clare? Yeah, it was. Yeah, I scored a point against Clare. Yeah, in midfield. Look, I actually enjoyed it. Yeah, I definitely enjoy it. Like, I suppose I there's plenty of hurling in cornerbacks nowadays. I think compared to maybe 20 years ago, it's completely changed. Like, maybe cornerbacks back then were just big, massive brutes of men. Like, they used to just leather lads and just drive the ball 100 yards down the field. Nowadays, the way it's gone, like, you're marking some serious forwards, and the ball given in is top class. Like, it's coming at angles, so it's a lot harder to kind of stop a lad, so you need to have a bit of hurling in you, to be honest.
Well, that's it. And like, I mean, again, instead of the clearances, now you have to look up and see, where's Noel McGrath, and let's move it through him or whoever else is detailed for that.
Sure, that's it. Like, I don't think I've ever really, I'd say once, maybe twice in my whole career, have I ever driven the ball 90 yards down the field just a hit and let get rid of out here, because like, you'd be shot, like, and rightly so. Yeah. Because,
but you'll get a huge cheer out of the crowd in Semple Stadium though.
Yeah, unfortunately the crowd aren't turning the match though, and they're not picking the team.
But it takes a lot of discipline not to get that cheer, because even now in hurling, that's what gets the big cheer, especially when you're under pressure, you know.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it is hard. Like, like, the crowd do love when you just drive the book, catch a ball maybe, or win a ball and drive it off down the field. But so it's hard to stop yourself. But then I suppose when you're looking out in front and like Noel McGrath running around, like, it's probably easier to give him the ball, really, because like, sure, look, just give the ball to Noel McGrath and you can see what he can do with it. Like,
yeah, no, exactly. Come here, how do you look back on the 3 years with Michael Ryan, if you're to look at the whole 3 years? You know, it started off so well, then in 17 you were dropped off the panel, and it was a weird one of being dropped off the panel because you got a really long injury, and I didn't know, is he actually injured or is he gone, or what's the story there? So a lot of confusion. Then you came back in his last year and you're a bit injured, and the only game you started was that last game in midfield, which wouldn't be your normal position. Like, it was a fair roller coaster, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a weird one, Ari. Yeah, look, I suppose maybe like it started off great because we won the All-Ireland, and then 17 then I got injured and I was going to be out for a couple of months, and then I was dropped. So that was a massive kind of it was, I suppose, a bit of a...
Bit of a blow, more or less.
Yeah, sure, look, it was, I suppose, because you're nursing an injury then almost on your own, like you're away from the group and the support of everyone else. Like, so things like that aren't really easy. And then 18, I was out midfield, which was fine, but then I picked up one or two little niggly injuries that cost me a couple of games. And so then I only kind of started coming right in the last game, and sure, we ended up just losing out in that. So I suppose there were two kind of disappointing years. Like, there was just... I almost feel like I kind of lost 2 years. Really,
yeah,
for all
yeah. You're only 26. Like, I mean, it's, yeah, you know, but the years can slip by between injuries and.
Oh, they can easily. Like, and so look, getting injury in any time in any part of season is a disaster, because like it's going to take at least 5-6 weeks, and within that 5-6 weeks, you got two championship games missed, and some fellas after hurling a storm, and that's you kind of like waiting now to get back in. Like, yeah, you know, like it's a very small margin in that regard.
Yeah. So in 17, then, so you were dropped off the panel. You're injured. There's a lot of people in Tipperary asking, is he coming back? We need him back. Stuff like this. Are you training away on your own, hoping you might get that phone call to come back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I got injured in 17 and I was off, I was still training away, absolutely. Yeah.
And what physio are you going to?
So I was still using the Tipperary physio. I just wasn't in part of the panel on the inside training or anything like that. But I was still using the boys. But I was doing my own thing, training and back in with the club. So, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't leave any stone unturned anyway to try to get back as much as I could.
Right, okay. And there was no communication then with Michael Ryan until 18, when you had some clear the air talks. Was that it?
No, we would have had communication. I would have talked to him kind of before the Galway game, where I kind of would almost kind of said, look, will you bring me back? Bring me back for the match, kind of thing. But there wasn't any clear the air talks either. Like, I don't know where that kind of headline came out of, right, clear the air talks, because it wasn't like a phone call and saying that we need to meet up and discuss a few things. That was it. I was the line the sand was drawn long before that anyway, so
okay,
it was nothing like that. It was just back, new year, new opportunity.
Right, so you were in contact, so the new year, you're whatever.
Yeah, back in, yeah.
You're back in and that's it. Yeah. So then I suppose when Liam Sheedy took over then, are you thinking, you know, does Liam think that I've got some disciplinary issues, or am I going to be okay with him, or, you know, what was that meeting like?
No, it's not really. I think I don't know about disciplinary issues anyway, really, to be honest, because I kind of argue that I don't really have disciplinary issues. Like, I've never had a problem when it comes to hurling or training or anything like that, or missing anything like that. But not really. Liam just came in. He said, "I was Saul. Told me what he expects of me." I suppose, and that was it. Really, like he put his trust in me, and I put my trust in him, and that was kind of it. Like, it was,
yeah. You're very fulsome in your praise for him. You're saying he just drives perfection. Liam will go to the ends of the earth to get the best out of you, because he knows for him to be the best at what he does, he needs us to be the best at what we do.
Yeah. Like, I'm a firm believer of investing time into people, like, and like he'll come back in trumps. Like, so, like, in fairness, Liam invested a lot of time into me and everyone else. And like, so, like, I suppose the best way to repay him was to try to win the All Ireland. Like, you know, like, I think it comes down to trust, really. Like, you know, he trusted me and trusted the rest of the boys. And like, and they brought in the best people they possibly could around us to give us that support.
Yeah.
So, but like, you know yourself, if someone is gonna do something extra for you, like, you're gonna be thankful. You're gonna repay them, like, you know, yeah, like, you're not gonna just turn your back.
So it's his passion and his work ethic that you go, look, if he's doing all this for us, we have to do it for him. Is that kind of,
like
a little bit,
absolutely,
like, not to simplify it or anything, yeah, too much.
Well, like hunger, like, it's very infectious attitude to be so driven and things like that. Liam is a very, very driven man, and like, you're bound to kind of pick up a bit of that hunger and motivation off him. Like, and look, we all have the same agenda. We all want to win. He wants to win. We want to win. And like, if he's going to put in the foundations for us to succeed, like, then you'd be mad not to try everything. Not that you don't try anyway, but you'd be mad not to to get some of it out. Like,
does he get down on the field himself, or does he leave it to the coaches and get reports back from them and stuff? Like, does he actually coach himself?
He would do a small diodo bit, yeah, absolutely. He would. No, he wouldn't. He's not a man now to stand on the sideline and watch. Like, he'd be in squatting down, like, roaring at
he likes to do. On the sideline during the match, doesn't he?
I've seen that picture against Wexford, was it? I think, all right, it was funny enough.
Yeah, I've seen him doing that before. And then, of course, after the final whistle blew against Wexford, he turned into a man possessed. Did you see that?
I did. Have you seen that?
Yeah, no, he did a few Ric Flair, woo.
Yeah.
And he was gone a little bit crazy. Like, I mean, I'm sure in training you see probably that side to him as well.
Yeah. But look, that just shows the passion he has for it. Like, you know, and like, it's that I think that stuff is very, very infectious. And like, So I think it's great to see. And you need that. I think you need a kind of real hands-on manager, like, rather than just standing aside, letting everyone else do it. Like, Liam likes to get in and know exactly what's going on and get down and dirty with you, like. So
yeah.
That's perfect.
Was it a big job to turn around the Munster final defeat? Because you'd been flying it, like, and you're destroying teams, and then you get a bit of a beating in the Munster final. And I was just wondering, like, what would the message be from him then? You know, that kind of way, how to get turned this around, because you were flat against Leash, and it took the Wexford game to spark you back again.
Yeah, no, it was very, look, the Munster final was very, very disappointing, obviously, but I suppose it does take maybe a couple of weeks to get over or something like that. Like, look, let's call it a spade, Limerick destroyed us. Absolutely destroyed us. So it does take, that does hit home. Like, that does hurt, like, when you get such a clipping in a Munster final. Like, because, like you want to win everything you can. Like, it's only a short space of time. Like, so you want to win as much as you can. And when you're putting in such effort and everything is going so well, then all of a sudden you get a bit of you hit a speed bump. It is disappointing. Yeah.
Did he leave you until the following Thursday off, let it get you out of your system? Or,
yeah,
like,
I think
what was the message then on the Thursday?
Yeah,
forget about that. That's easier said than done, I suppose.
Well, it wouldn't definitely, geez, no, it definitely wouldn't be forgetting about it anyway. It was more like, this is what, maybe where we went wrong. This is what we need to fix. We just try to improve and fix the things that went really, really bad for us. But I suppose the main thing is to keep the belief the belief in the squad and belief in everyone, and to not kind of get disjointed or in any way, like, because those kind of hiccups can definitely disjoint a team, like, especially when you're going so well and you hit that speed bump, like, they can throw you. So it was kind of keep the belief and get back on the horse as quick as you can, like.
Because that's the thing I always think about with Tipperary is the year you won the All-Ireland 16, you came back in 17 and you were brilliant again, and then you got hammered by Galway and the wheels completely came off.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? And I was thinking after Limerick, I wonder how they handle that differently, because Tipperary sometimes, because your supporters are crazy, like, they expect you to win every game, that when things go wrong, it seems like the wheels come off.
Yeah. No, it can absolutely. It can disjoint it. I suppose maybe the best thing is to get in around, get everyone in around together, and just get back slogging away through it as well, and just try to learn. I suppose you can just learn as much as you can from the defeat. Like, but I suppose if you keep bringing it on your shoulders, it's going to weigh you down. Like the opportunity was done. It passed. We didn't win. So, like, the next goal was to win the All Ireland. Like, so. Do you either want to keep wallowing about what's happened, or do you want to try and make something happen in the future?
Yeah. Do you split the season into two at the start to give yourselves two clear objectives, rather than not let one ruin the other one? Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah, I know. Like, don't look too kind of far ahead. Maybe I suppose you definitely shouldn't look too far ahead. Like, there's no point looking at an All-Ireland in January,
February. Maybe say we're in a Munster Championship this year and we're in an All-Ireland Championship.
Yeah.
And they're not mixed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I suppose, yeah, we probably subconsciously, we definitely do, like, because, like, for John Munster, we're definitely not thinking of any All-Irelands. Like, I suppose the way we do it nearly is almost take it game by game, and just, because, like, you're true Munster, you're still trying to really find your team and find your mojo, like, so you're definitely not going to be thinking, we'll be in an All-Ireland there in 2 months' time, sure, we'll have the team picked, but then it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. So you've two All-Irelands and you've beaten Kilkenny in both of them, so that must be nice, beating them well in both of them.
Yeah, beating them well in both of them, yeah, it's a rare enough thing to be able to say, I'm sure. No, two All-Irelands, yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. It's stuff you'd always dream of. Like when I first started in 14, I remember asking Shane McGrath, like, will I ever win in All-Ireland? Don't know why I asked him that, to be honest, but I just did. And he said, you'll win one this year, like, and we kind of, like, but sure, I was so young and naive, sure, I hadn't a clue. Like, we got to All-Ireland in 14, obviously we didn't win it, like, but, like when you lose, it is hard to think, will I ever get there, like, you know.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable when you finally do make that.
Yeah, finally do make it. Come here, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about this luminous yellow ball. Have you seen this going on today? So they're 8 years in the making of this
long time to make a ball.
But it's a smart ball, right? So not mean clever ball, it's a smart, like your smartphone. So it's going to be able to detect goals, balls going over the line. I'm sure your own Brian Hogan, he disputed a couple of ones. He's got he's so big, he's able to catch him over the line.
No.
And Hawkeye says they're pints. Some of them, one of them didn't look like a pint to me. You probably had a better look at those ones.
I did see something about, all right, sure, well, like, I don't know, like, what's the need for the colour change even?
Here's the reason about the colour change. I don't know if you were watching the St Mullins Rat Downey game on TG Cahir, and the sun was coming across this way. And I was watching that game saying, I can't see the ball. It was the shine of the sun. So maybe on days like that, I don't know, on with the floodlights, sometimes you can lose the white ball with the line or whatever, that a yellow ball might make sense.
Okay.
Maybe on a summer's day, the white one's fine.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But like, I suppose, to be honest, I wouldn't really be bothered too much as long as the ball is actually usable. Is it any good? Like, I know you don't care about what's in the middle of it. Like, you know, like, are they going to change the texture of it, the size of it, the weight of it, all this type of thing? Is that going to affect it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Well, they are. Patrick Horgan's nearly pucking it over from his own 21 metre line now. So
he puck rocks over from his own 21 for the love of God.
He told me before, I'm sure you've marked him. You're the one detailed to mark him. He does so much work striking off his back foot that it's just like a natural strike, he told me. So, like, I mean, he's just impossible to block down.
He is, yeah. Like, I remember he scored a point down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this year, and I don't know how he hit it. Like, he literally, because I jumped up at least 5 foot off the ground, and like, I seen a picture of it. Like, I don't know how he got the ball over me early. Like, he literally just came out the side and just little flick of the wrist and was over the bar. And like, it was outrageous. Yeah, what you can do in fairness.
But these corner forwards, they're improving all the time, though, is the point I'm trying to make. I'm sure as a corner back, you're like, Jesus, do I just need to get that bit tighter to get that block on?
But yeah, it's definitely harder from when I first started. So, like, but I suppose the balls in then are completely different. The lads are conscious. Like, they're putting their space in front of you, and it's angled as well. So, it's making it easier for the corner forward. But it's an absolute nightmare for the cornerback.
Oh, it is. Diagonal balls, no cornerback likes those, right?
No.
Right, come here, listen, Cahill, I'm going to leave you. I'm not going to ask you about next year because, like, I mean, we're not into next year yet.
No.
So we'll leave
come back
that
to me on that one.
Come here, thanks very much for coming in.
No bother, Conor. Thanks, Milan.
He gave me back then was we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was for you.
So Conor O'Donoghue from the Fixtures Review Task Force, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Colm. Thank you.
So Colm O'Rourke was writing at the weekend, I'm sure, a county man of yours, and he said, "It's fair to say I poked a bit of fun at this group when it was set up, because the members were, for the most part, of the establishment. You are not part of that establishment, so maybe explain exactly your background."
Yeah, sure. So Colm is my former teacher, first of all, and he's also... He was my, my coach in school as well. So I know Colm very, very well. When we did some stuff with Meath Club Reform in the past, Colm was vocal on that, I suppose, as well. So my background is I've been involved in Club Reform in Meath for the last couple of years. And that has, given me a little bit of an insight into the way that the world operates from a fixtures perspective. And we made some reforms, we've made some progress there. In fact, we're speaking tonight about it down in Navan around it. So I've been involved in that club fixture stuff for a long, long time. And I suppose on the back of that, I was asked to come in. But I'm definitely not an inside man.
You're not
as was said a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so he said for the most part anyway. Yeah, so there would have been you who wouldn't have been an insider. There would be GPA representative. There would have been the CPA representatives. That would be pretty much it. That wouldn't be kind of established administrators.
Yeah, and I guess so. Now, the people in the room are incredibly experienced, to be fair. And you have to do that. And I know you could bring 10 random people in and talk about it, but you have to understand all the issues that are there.
Yeah, no, they needed some establishment
Yeah, that needed to happen. And the CPA and the GPA came in as well, obviously representing the views of the players, which is very, very important. I mean, to be honest with you, I went in, I wouldn't like to say I was sceptical, but I certainly went in just with my eyes wide open as to how things might go. And I can only tell you, Colm, that I was hugely impressed. And that's the honest truth about how the whole thing was conducted, the breadth and depth of the discussions. It was done really, really well. There was no stone left unturned. And I mean, I went in, as I say, just wanted to see what way the ball would bounce. But it was really, really impressive. And I have to say, I believe that the GAHQ and the guys up there are definitely up for change and reform.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to ask you about then. So if they're up for change and reform, and if the whole kind of idea behind setting up this committee was reform and change, how is there a status quo option still on the table?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be perfectly frank with you. Number one and number two, either of those are, in my view, massive advancements on where we are today. The issue that we have, of course, is that if people generally, and maybe we got into a bubble, if people generally feel that option one or two are terrible and we've totally lost the plot in terms of what we brought forward to people, well then there is the stat. People have to understand what the alternative is, which is keeping it as
yeah,
is.
But should you not have the courage of your convictions to go, this is our group, we've all the stakeholders in a room, this is what we believe will reform the calendar, and we're standing over this and we're recommending this. Like even just give one example. Colour Murk said you should have just given one example. I don't mind the two options, but I really can't understand the status quo. How could you stand over being a fixtures review task force, stand over allowing that other one even be an option?
I suppose for people that are going to read the report and read 1, 2, 3, it has to be absolutely crystal clear to those people what happens if we don't go with 1 and 2. And
but if there's only an option for 1 or 2?
Yeah, but you see, that's not the way the GA operates, Colm, as you know. These things have to pass. And if they don't pass, the default happens anyway. So it's a little bit, I'm not saying you're misleading, but it's a little bit misleading to say that we haven't really put ourselves out there and we've kind of relied on it. That is going to happen, that status quo, if 1 and 2 are not picked.
But Central Council might pick the status quo and we might forget about Congress altogether. You're given Central Council the option to veto the other two, which shouldn't really have happened.
I can tell you there's absolutely no chance that Central Council will pick the status quo. Absolutely zero chance,
really?
In my view. Absolutely zero.
But they're comfortable. We know they don't even, GA people don't even want yellow slitters now. That's the latest thing. Change is not something we accept.
Well, that is true. Everybody wants change and nobody wants to change. And that is true across the board. But I can tell you genuinely, and I didn't know Tom Ryan and I didn't know John Horn before I went into this process, both of those are absolutely committed to this.
You think they're genuine? Because the CPA...
That's my view.
The CPA are very sceptical about that.
Yeah.
You know, and were they vocal about that in the meetings or... You know, was it a big shock for you that they walked out? They don't believe that John Horan and Tom Ryan want change, and that's why the status quo is in there.
Yeah, I mean, I won't speak for this for the CPA, but what I'll say to you is that there was Michael Higgins and Micheál Briody were in those meetings. Two good guys. They were absolutely committed to change and reform themselves and all of that. They went into those meetings a little bit different to the rest of us in the sense that they had to, go back and deal with their body all the time. So they didn't have this plenipotentiary status. If you remember from your Michael Collins and Eamon De Valera, so they went in and they didn't have the ability to go and talk and shoot the breeze in the way that the rest of us did, whereas the GPA did. So they were in a straitjacket position a lot of the time when they went to speak to the rest of the group, whereas the rest of us allowed the issues to develop and to try and arrive at good conclusions and ultimately good proposals. So I can't speak for the CPA. I think they were very determined. I don't know, but I think they were very determined for themselves to have arrived at the ultimate solution. They came to us and Micheál presented very well at the very, very start on a range of different proposals that they had. I think they had 7 and 8. I have them there with me in the bag. And there were some issues with those proposals. Some competitions weren't in them. There was issues around windows. They did come back then again later in the process and they came back with a fresh set. And we had a number of stipulations that we had to deal with for any proposal that was there. It was things like you must have you can't have any more than 4 weekends for county players. There had to be a number of windows that were there and they weren't... they were nearly there, but not quite there, I suppose, on that. And then they came with their last set, which is their third set of proposals at the very, very end. Whereas the other two, option 1 and 2, had already gone through the ringer. And it was just too late to come back.
And it really was another one, right?
Yeah, it was really nothing personal. I didn't think so.
So did you think they wanted to be seen as saving the day? This is our one.
I think that everyone has a view on their own.
Oh, everybody, yeah.
Has a view on their own. And they think that their own proposal is the winner and all of that. I think they maybe got caught up a little bit in that towards the end, where they definitely wanted to have the one that they brought up before the people, and then they would have backdash. And look, I understand they've been involved; they've made a very valuable contribution. To be fair to them, and I have to say, number one, I'm a CPA member myself, and two other members of the committee were also CPA members. So everyone came out, jumped out of the closet, George Michael style, in the middle of this to illustrate that their platform was one that we were all very sympathetic to.
So none of the administrators are CPA members.
Not
is that what you're saying?
They didn't come out of the closet if they were, is what I'm saying.
So when we talk about two, the only proposal, personally, I don't think the one where you're moving counties around provinces for the main championship. I don't know if that's a runner. I like the other one because I came up with it. You've changed it a little bit. I do think that, from my opinion, you've bottled it a little bit in that there are two glaring division All-Irelands, one and two there. Mm. But you've tried to keep everybody happy by allowing a team, the top team in Division 3 and the top team in Division 4, allowing them compete with the big boys, even though they're going to get beaten. And, you know, there's an element of the Division 3 and 4 counties, oh, well, we want to play for Sam. My attitude is, when you get to Division 2, you can play for Sam. And there's two, you know, obvious, the four divisions are split down the middle, yeah, and you have your one and two. You did it a little bit different than that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's 32 teams, 16 and 16. Absolutely makes perfect sense for if you're coming at this from year zero and all of that, but you're not. And I mean, players from Division 3 and 4 counties have been really clear with us the whole way through, is that they wanted a competition that that at the start of the year, or when the championship began, they wanted to be there to compete for Sam. Now, yeah, whether we think that's the right thing or not, I mean, that's...
But
that's,
players bound to want that. Who wouldn't want that? What intermediate player in Meath, you stick it out on a vote, who wants to play senior football or hurling? Sure, every intermediate player worth their salt is going, I want to be in that company. Wait until you're good enough. That's the that's my attitude. And Division 3 and 4 teams, Laois are flirting with the two of them. It's not like I'm trying to you know, talk from a position here where Laois would never be in it. I said it before, I'd take a Division 2 All-Ireland next year over being in Division 2 and not getting anywhere. Do you know? I think there's too much kind of plow-mossing being done with Division 3 and 4 teams.
Yeah, but just to take you back, I mean, all of this, Colm, has to go through a Congress. Okay, so we can have all of our views on whatever we think is the best thing, and we all do have different views on all the different aspects of what could happen in All-Ireland. But one of the things that this task force came through and decided was, we have to let everyone have the option where they could win All-Ireland. Because, number one, there's this issue around elitism and all of that, for a start, whether you agree with it or not. And the second thing is, in reality, it won't get through Congress, in our view, if we eliminate half the teams at the start of the year. What will happen in the years to come if that option is passed? I do actually believe that in due course, the Division 3 and Division 4 counties might decide, well, do you know what? Let's have our own intermediate All-Ireland and let's go at it from there. But I think that the momentum for that has to come from those counties. If it doesn't, because it's not there at the moment, we will be seen as forcing them into a secondary competition, and they'll be bitterly opposed to it. And then we will have the status quo. So we have to be... we have to be reasonable with everyone, and people, we can shoehorn people into different competitions, and that's fine.
But the thing about it is that the top two teams in Division 3 will play for Sam the next year anyways, because there's promotion relegation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so Division 3 teams are going to get that. They just have to wait a year if you're good enough. Do you know that? I think you could probably sell it, you know, a little bit. Everyone has a chance to play for Sam. Just maybe not everyone this year.
No, I absolutely hear where you're coming from. What I'd say is, if that option two is the one that's passed, you can see yourself that in the years to come, if there's a, you know, a change in mood, etc., it's very, very easy to change things around. And the other thing that we had in every one was a tier two proposal. So would it be, you know, beyond the realms of possibility in 3 years' time, Division 3 and 4 counties said, look, let's do our Tier 2 and Tier 1 or intermediates. I don't think it is beyond the realms of possibility. But right now, I mean, we can have all the grandiose plans that we want, but it has to be something that's politically palatable to a percentage of people. If it's not, we will be back to where we were before. Yeah. And I just can't emphasise this enough, Colm. This is a, I won't say once in a generation, but maybe once in a decade opportunity here to get reform, to get change. If this doesn't get through, or a version of one and two, I mean, you know, it's going to be put on the top of a shelf for a long, long time, and we're going to be back to square one, which would be a disaster in my view.
Yeah.
Like a lot of very intelligent people who know the ins and outs of the GA world from top to bottom have come together, and that's definitely not me, but they've come together into a room and they've arrived at a determination, at a set of recommendations that overall is definitely best for the association, And it will be huge for club players. Like, I mean, it will be massive for club players. And it will bring this thing that we speak about all the time, certainty for everyone from the start of the year to the end of the year for every single competition. And the second thing is, it will be much, much more competitive. So I know that I'm just a little bit concerned on option two that we're going to get stuck in the weeds in terms of who comes out and all that. You'll have had 112 games of teams in Championship.
Yeah. That'd be brilliant.
Very similar. Yeah. I mean, this is, obviously you came up with this yourself back in the day. This arrived at the same conclusion. It'd be just an incredibly competitive Championship.
Yeah.
The whole way through from start to finish. Will there be an issue if a three or four, possibly there might be two playoffs, not even quarterfinals, where they mightn't be as competitive. But out of 150 odd games, that's okay.
Yeah.
I think.
No, it is. Look, it's a massive, massive improvement. And where the third level, were they represented at it, Sigerson? Because I'm surprised they allowed the preseason competitions in January to stay. And like the reasoning for that, I was talking about this on the show last week, it was there'd be unregulated challenge games. And my point of that is a manager will go away to a challenge game, get beaten by 12 points, experiment, and there's no national media and they're not under that pressure. So you go play your challenge game, you find out a couple of things about your players and there isn't that spotlight. Because whether you like it or not, Mike Quirk is a new manager. He gets off to a bad start. You know, any of the new managers, Jack Cooney, they won it last year and they thought it was fantastic. They do go back training earlier, not to be embarrassed or get off to a bad start for those competitions. Whereas if they were gone, yeah, there would be unregulated challenge games, but isn't that fine? It's on their own. They organise it themselves, and unregulated challenge games are not necessarily a bad thing. It takes the complete pressure off everybody involved.
Okay, there's two parts to that question. One is the pre-season and one is the Sigerson. The pre-season first.
Yeah, it impedes on the Sigerson, I suppose.
Yeah, so just on the pre-season competitions, first of all, I mean, just as a general straw poll, when we began to discuss this, for the most part, and everyone's a fixture maker again, this didn't seem to cause a big issue generally for fixture makers, the pre-season. John Prenti, he's the Connacht secretary, and the point that he made was very clear. He said, okay, it's grand for Dublin and Kildare and possibly Laois. The issue is actually the smaller counties can't get challenges. Nobody wants to play them. So you have unregulated challenges, certainly, but some of the Division 4 counties cannot get challenged in that period. So there is a little bit of a just making sure that everyone has a series of games beforehand. It just doesn't really interfere with fixtures.
They can play each other. They can play Sigerson. A Division 4 team would play a good club team that's in an All-Ireland. You'll get challenge games.
It's not an issue, Colm. Just in terms of the overall, there's bigger issues than that. You know what I mean?
And I think that January is a very messy month and that's an easy fix to let Sigerson go. Play it, lads.
Yeah.
Play that. Without any...
In the report, we were absolutely clear as well that everyone who's playing Sigerson or on a Sigerson panel, that their first call is with that...
Unfortunately, we saw with Brian Howard, that's not the reality. Brian Howard chose not... He was on a scholarship and he chose not to play, just not to, you know, maybe to show he's committed.
Sure.
And what better way to show your new manager that you're committed by saying, look, I'm not going to play. Mm. And that's player's own choice because he's having to choose. Whereas if you leave that January clear for the third level, they can go. Because like there's none of them going to say, well, I'll give up a match for training. Do you know? Or a manager. Do you get me?
I understand.
I just think it's such an easy fix. I did think as a committee, you would go, they're too messy. The negatives way outweigh the positives. Let's just clear that month and let the All-Ireland Club Final go and the Sigerson Cup go and instead of having that mess.
Well, there's two things to it. The first is that those challenges, and they do actually give an opportunity for fellas that have never played county. You'll see in Meath played Loud last weekend in the O'Byrne Cup, and a pile of fellas nobody has ever seen got a chance, I suppose, to play in Park Tolton or whatever. And I'm not saying that's the right thing.
They get that in a challenge match.
Yeah, but they get a little bit of coverage and people understand where they're coming from. And maybe the McKenna Cup in Ulster is a little bit bigger. I'm certainly not wedded to them. I'm just telling you where the discussion was.
I think that's the discussion, though. It's shown a lack of kind of understanding about from an inter-county player's perspective of what that month is like.
Well, the GPA were there, Colm, so they didn't express that view, to be honest with you. They didn't have those same issues with...
Because I was saying, actually, sorry to cut you off on the podcast here with John Heslin. I said, John, have you ever discovered a player that you didn't know in a pre-season competition? Because everyone says, oh, well, everyone gets their chance. But sure, it's not charity. Like, I mean, let's be honest. And like, I've never seen a Laois player that I didn't already know impress in January competition. Do you know? And yeah. if you get one or two that might have, they were found out in the league. The point I'm making, everybody knows the players in the county. There's no magic wand in January. Suddenly this competition arrives and lads start showing, geez, well, I'm good enough. And on the ground, that's not the reality. Well, it hasn't been for me.
Yeah, it's not a huge issue one way or the other in my view. But if in the morning the GAA decide actually we're going to scrap those competitions, would there be big salty tears from the fixtures committee? I don't think so. But yeah. you know, in the list of things that we had to deal with, it was way down.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I think it's a little bit bigger. That the mess. I do think the mess in the year. The biggest mess is January to April. Mm. That then it starts clearing up a little bit. The other one, which probably caused a lot of debate, is the spring club game series or the multiple windows.
Yeah.
And I'm moving back towards multiple windows, and I was completely against them. I didn't think they could mix. And then I'm like, what better way to take all this control from the county managers by making them give up their players? Then you're wondering, is a player leaving a county setup to go back to a junior setup? And I don't know. The spring series is probably a little bit cleaner, but multiple windows work for Brian Cody and Mickey Hart and all these other managers when they're winning All-Irelands.
And the two names that you mentioned are actually important, Brian Cody and Mickey Hart. This was the issue that we spent most time on. And we went through this in way more than the option one and two and all of that. This was the issue, I suppose, that we had to dig our very deepest as to what's best for the player, for the county, and the association generally. There is, I suppose, instinctively, we're all drawn to the multiple window model. And the issue then we faced was, okay, and the chair, Eddie O'Sullivan, was very, very good. He said, okay, you believe that, come back to me, you've tested it, go and test it, put the Cork Senior Championship into it, football and hurling, and the Cork Senior Club Championship, football and hurling, and come back to me. And we had to go back and come with multiple windows as to how that looked and how that operated.
When you say multiple windows, how many windows? Are we talking three over the summer?
A month? It's in the report there. I just can't remember exactly how many it was. Let me see. Sorry. So basically, that's it there. So window, 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 window. You can see them as they come through.
Nearly like one a month.
Basically one a month or thereabouts. And again, there's a lot of attractions to that. Brings a fella back to the club. The club is connected and all of that. But when we came to it, what we concluded was that there's still going to be a huge issue there, because you are pitting the interests of the county team against the club. And what could happen is that you have this issue around hamstring. Nobody, as you know, nobody is 100% fit. Somebody is 90% fit, 95% fit. If you're 95% fit and you've got Dublin, let's say, you're playing for Meath, and you're back to my club, Dunboyne, and 2 weeks later you're playing in Croke Park against Dublin, you're 90% fit. What do you think is going to happen? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to work it out.
That's unfair on the inter-county player.
And that is very unfair on them. And yet we still... We're very much torn. The group was very much torn about that, but ultimately came down on the side that, you know, there's going to be much less issues with the other for all of its weaknesses. There's going to be much less issues, but we've said very clearly, let's do this with the minor, the under 17 competition, and put it into to windows and really police it hard with these new people that are going to be through the provinces to go out and proactively police it. And let's see if we can come back and arrive. Let's see what that looks like, and can we arrive at something then that works at the senior level?
Yeah.
So that's the recommendation we've made to the public.
Okay. So that's a very interesting one, and I don't envy your job figuring that out, because it is hard, and there's huge advantages and disadvantages to both of them. We know the spring series is like a championship. Nothing, pre-season, another championship, which isn't great. And then like the multiple windows for inter-county players, even the focus, you know, it's gone so professional now. Do we want to take that away from them, or do we want them to, you know, have real professional, you know, standards and preparation? And then, like you said, the, you know, players feigning injury, like no matter what at inter-county is the pinnacle.
Absolutely.
And it does overshadow club. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's not necessarily come that they're feigning injury. They're just not quite right.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever quite right, I mean, when they're playing, because you're always going to have a bump and a knock, you know, a niggle or whatever it is. And that's the issue that we have. And sorry, I didn't continue the point that I was making. It really works, actually, for single code counties. Okay, so multiple windows, Kilkenny, absolutely perfect because they don't have to worry about football. They go back to the club and it's fine. Tyrone the same. There's very little hurling in Tyrone.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the struggle really starts to come is if you put Dublin or Cork or Galway or Wexford,
our tip is a single county, nearly a county board level.
Well, it may be, but you know, all the players play football. So would they go back and play football for their club?
Well, that's another one.
I mean, I don't know that they would, and that's the issue. You'd find all of a sudden that all the guys. So for, I think the GAA at this point has arrived at a place where dual intercounty players we can't accommodate. They're just too much, too difficult. But dual club players, well, yeah, we're absolutely still going to make sure that they're able to do that, and that's really where the multiple windows model starts to really, when we go to push that into a calendar and you're trying to put the Cork clubs and then they're playing Tip, and that's it's tricky.
Yeah.
And that's where the problems live. But what we're saying is that's where we want to go, but let's try and get there. But we can't make it work right now. Maybe other people are smarter than us and they can make it work.
The professionalism maybe has gone a little bit too far to go back to that multiple windows. You know, it's maybe 10 years ago that was the time to enforce that, you know. Maybe we've gone too far down the road of professional standards at intercounty level to go back to a club, to maybe that's a junior level club, or even you're playing a hurling game, you're going back to play with the big ball for a week and your eye has gone out. You're right, it does cause a lot of problems, but I do like it. You mentioned the oversight unit there that's going to try and control over all this. Have they been decided yet, or give us an idea of how they can? Is this up to a county board to report to them? What if a county board tries to hide the fact that they're, you know, being dictated to by the county manager? Yeah. How will this oversight unit, who's going to control to make sure county boards enforce all this, how will they police it, I suppose?
Yeah, so the first thing is that county board officials are actually crying out for this themselves.
Right.
They want this, and there's a lot of people in the room who are involved, obviously, in looking after the fixtures within each county, etc. And they want someone above them with teeth to shake a big stick.
It's not my fault.
Exactly, because it's very difficult for them to make difficult decisions on the ground, because you know, you can end up as a pariah if best player gets injured because you're forced to a round through or whatever.
The county manager will say to a county board chairman, do you want to win or not?
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to prepare. And the answer is, well, yeah, of course. You know, there would be, it's easy for them to be overpowered, I'm sure, by a county manager who is, you know, on the face of it, knows more about this than they do, you know? So,
well, you see, and there's always a race to the bottom with this stuff as well. So again, fantastic year last year, for example, for Tip. You know, they had a brilliant All-Ireland win and all of that. But the problem for every other county is they cleared out their April schedule of championship in the way that they didn't do the year before. So there is this race to the bottom for county boards. They had success. And there's a horrible reality here is that if you do clear out your club schedule, you are actually much more likely to have success.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is remove this conflict of interest and put people in place at provincial level, so they're separate from the county board, and they are going to oversee and they're going to come up with sanctions, serious sanctions, and I don't know what they're going to be. There's some discussion about what they may or may not be, things around, you know, National League fixture, about money, expenses and all of those things that may be ultimately used to ensure. Really what you want to have is everyone doing the same thing and not one county manager
Long overdue, isn't it?
It's long overdue. And you know what? County managers want that too, because I know that the county managers are cast as demons, I suppose.
Well, but one follows the rules, the other doesn't.
Exactly. Well, you see, if the guy next door doesn't do it, you know that he has a huge advantage. And are you? I came at this as I was the minor manager within the county last year. And I know very, very well that if you have county, if you've club fixtures right up to the teeth of a big game, it isn't good for you and you don't like it. But if everyone is in the same boat, well then you'll accept it.
Yeah.
So it's just about bringing that consistency and equity and fairness across the board. But you got to give these guys teeth, and they were suggesting give them lots of teeth, separate them out from the county boards. County boards actually want this, and the county managers will also be satisfied if everyone is on the same page the whole way through the system.
Same page, exactly. So I'm going for the flip the season around option. I'm going for the spring series in the club. That's what
well, you came up with a column, to be fair, so
listen, I don't like keep going on about this, but I don't get credit, so I have to give myself credit, right? So what happens now? Do you canvass for this, or is this a John Horan, Tom Ryan kind of job to canvass this and go around, or Are you out of the process now?
So what happens, the first part of it is there's a number of proposals that are going to go up before Congress in February. And that will be around the administration and governance and various other things. And the guys inside will decide what actually comes up through to give the operation teeth. Because there's a lot of stuff that's independent of the actual structures. After that, there's going to be...
The structure stuff will wait and the other stuff
the structures,
will go through.
So the option 1, 2, 3 stuff... option 1 and 2 will come up before special Congress. A special Congress probably in April, May. And so all of the people who are on the committee, I'm sure, will be asked to communicate and speak and spread it out. Because we have to go around, because whenever there's change, like, I mean, I've been involved in this in Meath. We got absolutely blasted out of the park in our first year trying to bring reform in Meath. And including Colm O'Rourke wasn't happy at that time either. In our year two, when people got familiar with it, and I'd say that, I was integral to it, I would say that it was big communication issues that probably my fault in year one in Meath. In year two, our communication was much better. So there is a huge communication piece. And even, I suppose, the bits and pieces that I've seen about the report, I mean, it's kind of lukewarm, really. It's not exactly glowing stuff, I would say. So there's an information exercise where we sit down like we're doing now and try and allow people to understand the thinking at least behind it, and then they can draw their own conclusions as to what's right or what's wrong.
When you're talking to the county board officials and the delegates that are going to vote on this, I would advise you to mention money and mention it a lot and mention the word filter down.
Okay, fair enough.
And maybe I'm being overly cynical, but look, sell it the way you sold it here today and
that is another point, Colm, is that if we have, and from a neutral, and again, you know this because this is something that you think yourself. From a neutral, the real beauty about this is going to be seeing Dublin playing Killarney.
Summer
Mayo,
would be brilliant.
Like the whole way through, if option 2 comes through. And option 1 has loads of good things too. But in option 2, you have that all of the best teams, all of the best players guaranteed to play each other every single year. And it's undoubtedly true. And even then within Laois or Carlow or Meath or whoever else, wherever divisions they're in, they're going to have 3 big home games minimum a year that they, you know, unlike now, you don't know how many games you're going to have, maybe 1, maybe 2.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of there is a promotional benefit to that for each county that's a part of it. And possibly revenue as well that can filter through.
Yeah, well, sure, it'll be filtered through of the way the National League is. You keep the money from your own big home games. And even from the hurling point of view, Laois have 2 big home championship games set in stone next year, the hurlers have, which you can't wait for it. I mean, look, listen, I'm completely sold on that proposal anyways, and maybe the spring club games. But sure, look, best of luck on your canvassing tour. Filter down.
Okay. I will use that term frequently.
Connor, thanks very much for coming in.
Colm, thanks indeed. Thank you.
All right, listen, that's always time for. We'll be back on Monday. We're going to have the Woolley Awards on Monday, and we'll bring you a best of next week as well before Christmas. Talk to you then. Good luck.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Hurling ACCA.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.